Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back, Benny J fans. Your Ben Jarofsky show for this Tuesday, April 9th starts now. On today's show, Ben welcomes back none other than Chicago Teachers Union President Stacy Davis Gates. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader, chicagoreader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, you want to know what to eat, you want to know what to drink, well, there's all that and more at chicagoreader.com. And if you want more Ben Jarofsky, head to chicagoreader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A. B as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Eclipse Tuesday, and here's why. Got the great Stacy Davis Gates holding on, but I'm just going to just vent for a little bit, ladies and gentlemen. So yesterday was the eclipse. I'm going to show Stacy a picture of my beloved Bright One, home delivered every day. And so this is what the whole world was doing yesterday, except for me. And this is a moment, folks, where I'm going to use you like my therapists, and I'm going to be on the couch, the collective couch, and all of you out there are going to listen to me. I feel like I had one of those moments yesterday where I feel like, you know, maybe I'm too obsessed with politics and sports. You know, maybe I spend way too much time talking and thinking and reading about politics and sports, and maybe I should branch out into other things. So this is my long-winded way of saying I missed the eclipse yesterday because I was on the phone talking about either politics or sports. I wasn't doing a show yesterday, so I came and blame doing a recording, but I was probably talking about the UConn foul, now that I think about it. Stacy Davis Gates is going to be asked about that. No ducking and dodging, Stacy. And so I could have been talking about that. I could have been talking about my utter obsession with the concept of a nice mayor. That was on my mind. It's been on my mind. A nice mayor versus a mean mayor here in the city of Chicago. Should people be nice? Do you get further in life being nice or mean? All right. I've always been like nice. I'm starting to think maybe that was a mistake. I should be mean. You know, look how well it's done for Rahm Emanuel and Mayor Daley being mean. Okay. I was probably one of those. Who knows what I was talking about? Point is, I missed the eclipse. I didn't think anything of it. I went to the library. I had to return some books, get a new book out. There was a sign on the library window. It said, "We're all out of eclipse glasses." I was like, the library was giving away eclipse glasses? So I went to the library. The library said, yes. The line of people that were lined up to get eclipse glasses went around the block, out the door and around the block. And what was my reaction, ladies and gentlemen? I'm not particularly proud of this reaction, but I'm going to share it with you because it's part of my therapy session. My reaction was, too bad we didn't have people lined up around the block on election day. That was my response, ladies and gentlemen. All I think about are politics. And then the librarian chided me. She goes, "I respect and love science." And I was like, man, I felt really bad. Like, what an adult I am. At least I'm better than Marjorie Taylor Greene. She thought the eclipse was God's punishment for I don't know what. Man, they come all the time. We're having an eclipse because you've done bad, people. At least I'm smarter than that, ladies and gentlemen. So it's a new me, okay? It's going to be a new me. I'm going to be more well-rounded. I'm not just going to be obsessed with politics and sports. Okay, I'm going to care about science too. Of course, I got Stacy Davis Gates on. We're going to be talking about politics and sports tomorrow. It's going to happen tomorrow, or maybe the day after that. All right, Stacey Gabus Gates. Did you, first of all, welcome back, Cotter. Welcome back to my humble little podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. Thanks a lot. You know, the eclipse, my girls were really into it. Their teachers really taught like units on it. And so they would come home. I have more factoids, I think, that I've forgotten about it. Just listening to them, you know, talk about all of the particulars of yesterday. So I thought it was pretty cool to, you know, experience it through their excitement about it, their anticipation. So that was cool. But I wanted to tweak you a bit about voting. I was on social media yesterday and there was a commentator who said that all of the excitement that you were talking about with the eclipse, the line around the corner, that's the argument for same-day registration and voting. That people get caught in the moment and that they may hear about it, they may understand it, and then when it comes, they react. But with voting, right, and if you're in a state that doesn't have that, then you get left out. And so that, you know, understanding human psychology and behavior, we should shape policies that help, you know, open the gates for that type of behavior to be more compatible with that activity of voting.
Okay. Well, first of all, I agree. Voting should be made as painless and as easy to do as possible. And any attempt to make it more difficult is basically a MAGA attempt. And this is me speaking, not Stacey. A MAGA attempt to have an advantage in the election. Because MAGA is working from the assumption that their people are going to show up rain or shine. That's the underlying assumption. First of all, I don't buy that. So I think MAGA is making a mistake, and they painted themselves into a corner on this matter. And make it as easy as possible, Stacey. Take them as way of many obstacles as you can. But that notion that people have where they want to, they're so eager, in this case, for free sunglasses, that they would wait in line. And the line went around the block. That they even knew that the library was giving away the free glasses. I didn't know that the library was giving away free glasses, Stacey. I don't think we'll ever achieve. Let me amend that. I don't think we've ever achieved that in our lifetime here in the city of Chicago when it comes to voting. Can you recall something since you moved to this town, which was whatever, I don't know, 25 years ago, whenever you moved to Chicago, that where people were that eager to vote?
No. It actually takes some precipitating emotion to get, you know, people. I think Kim Fox's election had a lot of motivation in it because of the abuses that people experienced in Cook County and in particular Chicago with the criminal justice system. So there was a very specific movement that, you know, helped to drive turnout and the energy for that particular race. I think that there was energy behind Mayor Johnson. Movement energy is what, like when they started coming out with the t-shirts with the comic book t-shirts, and you know, there was a certain energy and movement around that. But you know, I read about like the energy associated with Mayor Washington. That's probably the last one that was so concentrated and with that particular type of eclipse-like energy. It takes a lot, though. Like, government hasn't been good to people, right? And that's not one experience. It's, you know, an amalgam of experiences that happen over time. So people don't respond to government or changing government or getting new representation in government as they do to an event that has little consequence over their daily activity in the way that government does. One might say is, you know, not smart or disconnected or disengaged, and it's a reality.
Yeah, it is a reality that we would spend so much time worrying and caring about things that have no direct impact in our lives and be so indifferent about the things that do. But the reality, and I've had this conversation with so many people, is that they don't think government has an impact on their life. They feel alienated from government. They think their politicians sell themselves out as soon as they get elected. I've heard this line a million times. I'm sick of voting for the lesser of two evils. The lesser of two evils is still evil, and I'm not going to vote for the lesser of two evils. Stacey, I've heard that a lot, particularly in this cycle, with the war in Gaza, the bombing in Gaza, and a lot of people come on the show and address that, say that, well, I'm not going to vote for Joe Biden. And then I try to point out, no matter what your attitude about what's happening in Gaza right now, how horrific it is, and how we need, this is me speaking again, not Stacey, how we do need a whole new way of approach to that conflict, no doubt, and start holding Israel accountable. This is me speaking again. You cannot, in my humble opinion, say that there will be no difference between a Joe Biden administration and a Donald Trump administration. I feel there's a certain recklessness to that statement, Stacey. And there's just like a certain willful ignorance to that statement, in my humble opinion. Your thoughts?
I have a lot of thoughts on this one, so I'm going to try and simplify it. You know, I exist in a world, we all exist with feelings, right? We have feelings. We are happy, we're mad, we're hurt, we're disappointed. We feel okay. Like, we have feelings. And for some of us who live in this world in marginalized creations, like, you know, Black woman, I can tell you that, like, my experience as a labor leader in the politics of Cook County, Chicago, and Springfield oftentimes leaves me mad, right? And that's just with identity. That's not even with what we are trying to accomplish in our movement or what we're trying to accomplish in our union. So I got a lot of feelings. I got a lot of dimensional feelings, which is why I have to be clear about what my focus is. Like, what are my objectives? What are my goals? And what are they as a union leader or as a movement leader? That helps me to make those decisions when I'm in my feelings, which is probably all the time, right? So, yes, there is a lot to be critical about. It is. It is always a lot to be critical about. And is it easier to do movement with, to build our union, to do our work with Donald Trump? Or will it be easier to do our work to meet our objectives with Joe Biden? Right? And you got to hold those two things, your feelings, the depravity that you are experiencing, the disagreement, and where are we trying to go? And is it less hard or is it harder? because heart is at the center of transformation from the perspective of people-centered politics, right? For the many politics. And so that's what I think of, because Donald Trump has made it very, very clear what he thinks of women. He's made it very, very clear what he thinks of Black folks. So that's helpful to me in formulating what I need to do for what I do as an individual, as a mother, as a wife, as a child of, parents who are getting older. You have to take all those things into consideration. It's not just one thing I'm pissed off about. I'm pissed off about a lot of things. And how do you hold that, the work you're supposed to do, the humanity you're supposed to have, and make decisions? So you got to have a filter for that. And the filter that I've been developing is harder or less hard. And neither choice is, quote, pretty. And I believe, because we have been transforming things in our movement, that less hard is a little easier than more hard, right? It was harder under Bruce Rauner. It was. We survived that. It was harder under Rahm Emanuel. We survived that. It was harder under Lori Lightfoot. We survived that. I would like less hard.
That there you go. There's the next Biden commercial.
You better not put that in a commercial.
I don't even want to say that when it comes out of the commercial, because it just sounds bad.
That's not the discussion for the voter either. That's the discussion from the leaders of spaces that build base with people. That's not the discussion to a voter. I'm not having that discussion with a voter. I'm having that discussion with people who are responsible for people.
Yeah.
Who are responsible for organizations and for organizing. That's the conversation. What are we doing? What is our map of this? What does power look like under him or him? Right? That's already a turn off for me, him or him. But what does it look like under either individual, and what is that material impact, right? And how do you hold that with the depravity that we're experiencing in the world right now and our country's role in that? And I say world because it ain't one issue, Ben. It is not one issue. And our awareness to the complexity of our role in international politics, that is what needs to grow, because it's not one place at one time with one impact or one thing. Yeah. So I'll say that. Yeah. It's bigger than just one thing. And one thing is freaking huge.
And then there's for me, and this is me, not Stacey. There's also like a kind of emotional connection. And I'll do a reference to one of our favorite people, Karen Jennings Lewis. Shout out. I happened to be with her, believe it or not, Stacey, right before the 2012 Obama run, Obama's second election in 2012, okay? And we were having a conversation. It was a whole bunch of people sitting, having dinner together, and there were some lefties at the table who were bragging about not having voted for Obama. They voted for Jill Stein or whoever, the third party candidate. I think it was Jill Stein. And Karen said, I'm a girl from the South Side. I am so voting for Obama. And it was like she was saying there was an emotional thing there. And I was raised a Democrat. My mother was, she went back to the New Deal, FDR. So like, it has to be a really, for me, like the candidate has to be so much worse on the Democratic side than the Republican side before I do vote Republican. It's happened twice in my lifetime, Stacey. So I really connected with what Karen said. And I know a lot of people would tell me, Ben, you and Karen are wrong. You should drop the emotion connections. You should be more analytical. But what can I tell you? We are who we are, Stacey. So emotions do play into it as well. Go ahead.
Well, you're not alone. I mean, says the rest of America. And that's the part about like the political commentating that falls short is that people don't want to look at like we respond as human beings to stimuli, which means that we respond to how people treat us, how people make us feel, the impression that we leave with in different situations. That those are experiences, and you're not gonna extract that from it because you're smart, right? It's just a part of it. So how do you hold all of the complexities and still compel people to fight for transformation? Like, that's why I think the political discourse is so one-dimensional, because the only thing we're talking about is who's good or who's bad or who's bad or who's worse, right? That's typically the political discourse. When I think the movement that I'm a member of has tried to create a discourse that transforms the actual platform in order to give people an opportunity to engage in the thing that speaks to them, the thing that could potentially change their station materially. So let's transform what we engage with, and then let's engage with it, is what people want to do. But you actually have to engage with the thing that exists right now as you are transforming it, which gives you these complex, complicated, unfair choices.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what is. So you have to be clear about your focus. I know what is. I'm not happy about what is. I know what I want. And so on the road from what is to what I want, what road has the least amount of potholes?
There you go. Hey, Biden, you could use that one.
Terrible. This is not a presidential nothing. This is us talking about the complexities of the world we have while we are working to create the world we want to participate in.
I agree. All right. So you mentioned on that riff about political commentary that falls short. And we'll get into basketball commentary that falls short, because I am going to bring up that foul. I'm bringing it up. I'm still talking about it. I got DeFron Smart coming on tomorrow. Hoop Junkies, we're going to take the deep dive on it as well. One of the greatest point guards ever played in the city of Chicago, DeFron Smart, a regular in the Ben Jarowski Show. So political commentaries fall. I obsess with this stuff, Stacey, because first of all, I read. I could have added a list at the top, sports and politics journalism. I would read three newspapers a day, probably more when you just now with the internet. I'm just reading constantly. And I'm always upset at the business that I've been in. I'm always mad at them. I'd say, this is so biased. I've learned to see the bias. And the way journalism works these days is that people don't even they think they're concealing a bias, but they're really expressing a bias, and they don't realize it. So I think there's a lack of honesty. So the older I get, I try to be as honest as I can. It's just like now I go, there's an emotional level to what I do. Okay, I'm carrying on from what my mother taught me, which probably is why in many cases I'll vote for the Democrat. There's no choice in this coming election. So this gets me to my thought. Get your attitude about this. I just read Greg Pratt's book about Lori Lightfoot. And Greg was on the show last week, and I've been thinking about it. And I put this out there in the reader today. This concept of a nice mayor versus a mean mayor. And the city of Chicago supposedly rejected Lori Lightfoot. If you read the political commentary, Stacey, because she was a mean mayor and she was mean and nasty. She needlessly picked fights with people, said all kinds of just horrible things to people.
No, I was there.
What's that?
I was there those 4 years.
Yes. So you experienced firsthand. And by the way, it's all in Greg's book about Stacey experiencing it. The city of Chicago rejected her for that. I'm like, wait a minute. I hate people being mean and nasty and jerks, Stacey. I have an aversion to that. But city of Chicago had no problem with mean and nasty when it was Rahm Emanuel being mean and nasty. They were only upset when it was Lori Lightfoot being mean and nasty. Okay, Rahm was mean and nasty to Karen Lewis. City still reelected him. Okay, now we have Brandon Johnson, who in my humble opinion is, quote unquote, the nicest man who's ever been mayor of the city of Chicago. You know, he's respectful. He listens to what you say. He knows how to politely disagree, uses humor to deflect tension and conflict. He'd be a guy at the dinner table, as I've told you many times, Stacey, who would be the mediator between. So we have a nice guy mayor. Guess what, Stacey? The North Side and MAGA doesn't like him either. Wait, so what? This is my end of the column. What do Brandon and Lori Lightfoot have in common that so many people dislike them? They don't have the same temperament, so it can't be that. That's my general thoughts.
So what is it? You tell me.
You ask me?
Yes. I mean, look, you're very clear about talking about your political awakening, how you've covered Chicago, especially politically, over mayors, which is difficult to do in Chicago, right?
Yeah.
Because we haven't had that many. You know?
I'm counting them up. Yes, go ahead. We haven't had that many. You're right.
And that said, you tell me what you perceive as the issue.
I will say what I perceive, and I will say this before I say it. The views and opinions I'm about to express are mine. They are not and this is going to be like we do a regular show on Wednesday with Monroe Anderson, and this is a favorite topic of ours. And I learned this when I moved to Chicago, and I lived through the Harold Washington election, and I'm just going to say it. White people have an issue with black bosses. And the epitome of a boss in Chicago is the mayor. And it's a psychological issue. It's hard for them to confront and deal with. There's a state of denial constantly. Race in this country is always a challenge. It's always difficult. You never know what part of you is speaking from prejudice. It's a disease in some ways. And I've just been watching it all these years. And so I feel that white people are generally more comfortable with a white person as mayor. And they just assume that a black person can't run the city. And to me, that undercut Lori Lightfoot, and it's undercutting Brandon, and it, to a certain degree, undercut Harold Washington. And, Gene Sawyer, they just put him in to take him out. So they were so dishonest with Eugene Sawyer. It was unbelievable. So that is my opinion. Your response?
Look, I live in this body. I'm a black woman. And so, yes, yes, yes. And if I may, I actually think that one of the biggest disappointments that I have is that I've spent my life in classrooms, in working situations. All of my experiences have been integrated. All of my experience has been integrated. And so there are, and many people's experiences have been integrated. And so I'm disappointed that people my age still hold on to very antiquated and wrong tropes and caricatures and stereotypes about race and especially like the anti-blackness, like that's a particular type of thing. And you would think that with all of the cultural references that have been extracted from Black America that now live in popular America, that that would have helped to normalize our existence in the spaces that we are participating and engaging in. And what responsibility does Chicago have to get better at this? We are all here together. And the only way that this is going to work ever is if it works. And so this idea that we can continue to behave in a manner that continues to dehumanize, continues to create caricature, and it's not okay. And, you know, I don't know how to keep being hurt about that. I don't know how to keep being angry about that. I do know that there is resignation, I think, that's setting in, because I don't even have the energy to be pissed off. It's just like, people get to choose. And there is so much data and evidence that Black people are actually human.
Well, so first of all, I got a couple of responses. One, I do think it's getting better. Because what Harold experienced in 83, I mean, Lori Lightfoot and Johnson have not experienced.
We use the wrong words better. I do think we use the wrong words. I think that you experience the anti-Blackness, the racism, the marginalization from the space in which from the time period and the space in which you exist. It never feels better.
Yeah, valid point.
Right. It never feels better. It's just different.
Different. Fair enough. It wouldn't be a Ben Jarofsky, Stacey Davis, Gates conversation if she didn't correct me. All right. So she's a teacher, ladies and gentlemen. But I will say also it's beyond Chicago and Chicago politics. And I'll give you an example. It's and this is an example in a world of something, you know, and I'm just going to say up front, I do not know this world. I'm not into popular music. Everybody knows me, knows I pretty much stopped listening to music after 1979. And I'm continually listening to the same music. But Beyonce just came out with an album that I understand it is sort of country oriented. Do you know how much abuse that has generated, Stacey? I'm like, it's a threatening thing to people that Beyonce has come out with an album that's country oriented. I do not.
And what is threatening about it? Is it that she's successful at doing whatever she wants to do? Is it threatening that the popular story about country music is wrong? Is what is threatening? Is it threatening that you now have a wider audience? Is what is threatening becomes like the real question. I feel like when we have discussions about race or anti-Blackness, we're not like interrogating the people. Like when I have experiences in rooms of white folks and someone said something completely like out of pocket, I feel like those who are more empathetic and quote woke, they run to me like, oh my God, right? And I'm like, yo, I ain't the effed up one. Oh boy is the effed up one. Go ask him why he's an idiot.
Yeah.
No, I'm not okay. And this is probably going to happen again today or this week. And I won't be okay then either. But in order for me to be okay, people like him or her, you know, they have to face consequence for their behavior in ways that help make it okay for me. Yeah. It's So thank you for checking in on me. I appreciate you seeing my humanity and checking in on me. And that word "and" is so powerful, and we don't like zero in on it a lot. And go check old boy or old girl and put them in their place,
yeah.
Right? And make sure that they experience a consequence from their behavior so they don't think it's okay.
Yeah. No, but very rarely are in the same room. But I hear what you're saying, if you follow what I'm saying. Very rarely in the same room. Now I'm thinking, to answer your first question, what is so threatening about it? I'm going to have to think about that because I don't know if there's one. I do not know if there's one answer above all. What is so threatening about it? You know, maybe it's just jealousy because she's so good at what she does. You know, maybe that's to a certain degree.
And it's lazy.
What's that?
And it's lazy. Like, racism is really lazy to me. Like, one of the things that's least talked about is the laziness of it. Like, the laziness is that you don't have to engage because you've already concluded it's not human or worth engaging, right? So you don't engage, you don't learn anything more, you don't challenge yourself, you don't go through a process of transformation, you don't even get to see the world in Technicolor. You get the same old, like, black and white, boring, antiquated, whatever, right? It's lazy and it's not rigorous. And I always hear that, you know, lazy and rigor and lack of rigor associated with black folks. And I think, nah, that ain't it. Because what's lazy is still believing that it's 1865 and you're still in a civil war. That's what's lazy. What's lazy is like relying on George Wallace's talking points in 2024. That's lazy, right? That is like, yo, you just copying and pasting. You don't learn nothing.
Yeah. It is, by the way, exactly George Wallace's talking points. I just read a book about George Wallace. I was like, oh my God, this is Donald Trump.
You understand my point?
Yeah.
It's lazy. That racism, the way in which it is practiced, anti-blackness, and the way in which it is practiced, it is lazy.
All right. Before I get to what I'm really dying to talk to you about, we were eating our vegetables before we get to the dessert, which is basketball. People may not know this, but Stacey Davis Gates played basketball back in the day. In fact, I urge everybody to check out. We did a whole show just talking about 90s basketball, Michael Jordan's. And I urge everybody to go check that one out from when the Last Dance movie came out. Mean versus Nice. This is on my mind these days because supposedly Lori was too mean. Lori Lightfoot was too mean. And we need nice people. I'm just telling you, the political conventional thought is, Stacey. So I've already riffed on it. Your thoughts, mean versus nice from a mayor. Go ahead.
Can I be honest with you? Lori being, quote, mean was never my issue. Like, I always thought that was a very lazy analysis, too. So, I mean, honestly, that was never, and I don't think I ever talked about the struggle that our union had with City Hall in that way. I talked about it in a dimension of not being able, there was incompetence that we experienced. There was an intractable perspective that we experienced. There was frustration that we like just a very frustrated, challenging table because people could not say yes, they could only say no. So that becomes frustrating. It lacked leadership, it lacked vision, it lacked dimension, right? That has always been like my analysis of the experience that our movement and union had with the fifth floor during Lightfoot's administration. That said, you ain't got to say anything else. You get to just talk about the job performance. And in doing so, there's enough there. and you can just keep it on the one. It doesn't have to devolve into personality, but that's women, right? They want to like you. I remember there was some vapid column that the Sun-Times printed by someone, I don't even remember, by another woman, in fact, that was published about like me and Lori not, quote, liking each other. And I was just like, and y'all printed this? Like, who the F cares about if we like each other? We disagree on policy. We disagree on the implementation of policy. We disagree on vision and leadership. We disagree on real concrete issues. And to boil it down to like, we don't like each other, like, you got to do something to me for me to not like you. And being incompetent, now, I don't like incompetence, but that doesn't get me to dislike a human being as a person. And so it was just always silly to me. And yet that is a constant refrain. And it's, again, lazy in the same way. When the only thing that you can talk about with respect to women is their personality or their appearance or their tone, you're lazy. You really are. You don't even want to understand their leadership or the complexity that they put forth in the world. And then we miss out on that analysis. Then we miss out on those models of leadership, because the only thing you're talking about is their suit is too big. And your jeans are ugly, or your gym shoes are old, or your gym shoe strings are like dirty, you know, or like, where do you shop? Like, come on.
Yeah, that was a good riff. All right. I feel we've consumed enough of our vegetables. Let's get out of business. I'm looking at the clock and I know you got things to do. So I have so many thoughts about what went down over this weekend, over this last week or so in terms of college basketball. And what it says about a lot of things in the universe, because I actually think it's a parable for a lot more than just basketball. So I want to cover a few things with you, the men versus women, evolution of the games, where we're going with that. But I want to get to this one first. So on Friday night, follow me in this, ladies and gentlemen, you political junkies out there. I'm going to teach you something that went on in basketball. There was a highly anticipated showdown between University of Connecticut and Iowa for the right to go to the championship game. Iowa was up by, I'm doing this off the top of my head, 1 point with 3 seconds left. Connecticut had the ball. And if Connecticut hit a jump shot, they would win the game, most likely, at the buzzer. At that moment, the referees called an offensive charge on one of the Connecticut players, thus giving the ball back to Iowa. Ultimately, Iowa won. In the aftermath, the United States viewing audience was subjected to harangues from various UConn supporters. You could see the bias already, Stacy, in the way I'm framing this. Saying how unfair it was to call a foul at that moment. They should let the players play. My attitude was it a foul? If it's a foul, you should call it. Why do rules suddenly not exist in basketball if there's 3 seconds left in the game? That's kind of how I viewed it. So the ball, metaphorically speaking, is in your court. Stacey Davis Gates, your thoughts about calling fouls.
Again, like, this word lazy is going to keep coming up for me. Because what I feel like happened is, like, sports media decided that they wanted a Larry Bird and Caitlin Clark. And that they wanted to erect that same storyline, if you will, with a white woman, Indiana, Iowa, same difference, right? Someone who walked into the damn arena shooting and hitting them, too. Like she nice. We can talk about the way in which sports media and a rabid fan base helps to dictate like what we are receiving in terms of the public relations. And there, it is a fact that Caitlin Clark is a good ball player. Like, that's a fact, that Caitlin Clark can shoot the lights out in anyone's gym, typically. Those are facts. And I feel cheated as a fan of basketball that I spent most of my, like, basketball fandom, emerging fandom, hating Larry Bird. I was supposed to. I was supposed to like the Lakers and not the Celtics. And it's just like, yo, he nice. He's like really good, right? So it's, first off, sports media is completely unfair with their lazy storylines, right? Caitlin Clark is great without you making, without sports media making her the great white hope. Like, Caitlin Clark didn't need their help with that. Caitlin Clark earned her stripes because she cold on the court, period. Right? They, in fact, they did her a disservice because more people should be like fangirling, right? That's one. Two, in order to make her Larry Bird, you needed to erect a Black person or people that had more caricatured villain nature, right? And so they choose LSU. And they choose LSU because they live unapologetically. And they are having fun and they're joyful. And why not? Right? They were, like, I've never seen Black women on that level at their age be so free in the way that they were free. Because many of us are taught respectability politics and how to act in front of white folks. I appreciate that they don't give a damn who watching them and they do them. I love that freedom. And why not? Like, why can't they? And so you're taking all of this in, and these are not the roles that these ladies consented to either. And I use the word consent very intentionally. These are the roles that sports media provided for them. And what's also very interesting about this is that when you remove it from the corporate part of sports media to the actual commentating and the translation of it to the fans, like, look at the ESPN crew. Who was it? Like, Carter and Duncan and I'm missing one of the ladies' names right now. It'll come to me. But, like, that, like, color commentary that you heard on ESPN from those three women, perfect. They didn't have to marginalize Caitlin or push Angel Reese up. They held both of them, and they were able to, like, make us understand why both women are competitors and they should have the ability to be in their competitive nature, that they are good and this is why they're good. Again, lazy. You had so many storylines in that entire tournament that weren't talked about. And here's the other thing. So we had a reckoning on race in this particular run. When are they gonna have a reckoning on how they wanna, you know, treat women, right, who don't present as feminine in the sport as well? Because that has a lot to do with who they pick out and center in their stories as well. Look at that as well. Like, I wanted to see more of Dawn Staley. Dawn Staley is not just a coach, she's a leader. She has a practice as a leader. How in the world do you lose your entire starting five? A starting five that got drafted, right? And then you put a new starting five on the court that sat on the bench. And then you see the freshman playing with confidence. Like, you just got here and you are on the biggest collegiate stage and you score 19 points and get them right back in the game. Yo, who is Dawn Staley? How is she able to allow that to happen? What is her zen? how do they respond to it? And what can I learn as a leader? How about this storyline? Dawn Staley has been called the future of women's basketball since she was a high school point guard. Literally, it was predicted that she would be the catalyst for bringing women's basketball to another level. And there were no lies told. And we're not talking about her journey through women's basketball, her role in its prominence, both as a scholastic player, a collegiate player, a player who went international, an Olympic player, a WNBA player, and now at two different schools, Temple and South Carolina, and raising those programs to prominence. Hell, you could do a whole documentary on her, but instead of that, we get this tired-ass storyline again. Yo, it's lazy. People need to stop handing in first drafts like they final drafts.
What is the... Wait, okay. So you that was a great riff. You covered up pretty much every question I was going to ask you on that riff, but you didn't answer the first question I asked you. So let's go back. In your humble opinion, was that a foul? And even if it...
That was a foul, and you don't call it.
Wait, time
out. Oh, it wasn't a foul. You know it wasn't a foul.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, you know what?
It wasn't a foul. But you also, hey, yo, I love Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan.
Jordan rules. Detroit ain't lying about that. But you had to have Jordan rules because Detroit would kick your ass.
Wait a minute. Okay, well.
Okay, the best player on the court.
Yes.
Gets protection. Jordan rules. You don't remember that? Come on, you said you were a fan.
Wait a minute. Jordan rules. Okay, literally Jordan rules. Now we're on a tangent here.
No, it's not a tangent.
Jordan rules literally were the rules that Detroit wrote to defend Michael Jordan, which was essentially assault on a basketball court that they got away with. Okay, they got three guys hammer him. Bill Laimbeer, John Sally. I've seen John Sally talk about it.
So much so that there was pressure put on officials to do a better job of protecting him when he was on the court. This is all post Detroit.
Okay, so
that was the impact. So, I'm never capitulating that this happened. I'm just saying what other people said happened. Because I just think he was great. And the haters will say that the referees, the haters, even in my family who rooted for Detroit, right? The haters will say that Michael Jordan got preferential treatment from the officials. They do say that he got away with things that no other player would get away from. I mean, Isaiah say that. I've heard him say it.
They mugged Michael Jordan. Okay. I will send you. We're done.
I'm not stating that. I'm just saying that there is a culture within the game of basketball where there are officials who will protect star players in a way that other people don't necessarily receive the call.
Fair.
Now,
fair.
You know that is a thing that people oftentimes point out.
That is correct. I do know. Okay.
So you know that. So you can look at this in a variety. I'll tell you which way I look at it.
Oh, that's just it. Here we go.
I'll tell you which way I look at it. One, that does happen, right? The officials will protect those players. Two, I think officiating any sports competition is damn near impossible. And shouts out to the officials who do it, because you can't see everything and you will make mistakes. And God bless you if you make the mistake at the wrong time. Seriously. So both of those things are true. And what's also true is that was a terrible ass call.
There we go. Okay. She got to it. I will now, when we're done, I will send you the video. The elbow went up. Offensive. That's all there is to it. Now,
it was terrible.
The debate I had with some Chicago high school referees, public school league referees, over the weekend, was not whether it was a foul. They all agreed it was a foul. The issue was, do you call it at that time? So,
no. You do not get in the middle of the end of a basketball game. And here's where coaching comes in.
Ever?
Look.
Ever?
That's where the judgment comes in. That's why I don't want to be an official, because that is a difficult job. Like, look, like I do think it was a bad call. I've said that, terrible, in fact. And like, to be an official, God bless you, because that stuff is difficult and you're never going to leave a game with everyone high-fiving you.
No, no one's going to give you. And you know what? I admit there's a, like, I have been on the other side. I must confess. See, this is the honesty. I've been on the other side complaining about a referee's call. 1994, you were in high school. I was watching my beloved Chicago Bulls play the New York Knicks. They had the game won. And then Hugh Hollins called a foul on Scottie Pippen. That was a non-existent foul. And put Hugh Davis on the free throw line. That was 30 years ago. I still haven't got over it, Stacey. So I've been on the other side.
Let's talk about the officiating. You remember in the Sacramento Kings and the LA Lakers? Was
yes,
in-
I do remember that. Yes.
That was the worst officiating series that I've ever watched. I can tell you conclusively, that's when I fell out of love with being extra about NBA tournament time. Like, oh my God, I was so like,
Have you heard Kobe on this? Kobe Bryant has talked about this, and I'll send you that clip too. Instead of watching Eclipse, I obsessively watch stuff like this. Kobe Bryant said, and I'm paraphrasing, the great Kobe Bryant, who I rooted against his entire career because I'm a Bulls fan, I'm not a Lakers fan, and I don't jump on bandwagons. So, but I respect greatness, okay? I didn't like Larry Joe Bird, and I didn't like Magic Johnson, ladies and gentlemen, but I respect greatness, and they were both great. That said, I rooted against them their entire careers. Okay, Kobe Bryant said that in his humble opinion, he's very skeptical about the refereeing in that series. He felt that the refereeing was to his team's advantage. But he also pointed out that the Sacramento Kings shot atrociously from the free throw line when they went to the free throw line. So his point was, they could have won the game. They could have won the game. They just shot bad. And I would say this to UConn fans. You guys didn't box out. You didn't get that rebound when Caitlin Clark missed a free throw. So stop crying about the referee and talk about not getting a rebound. That's all I'm saying, Stacey.
You can talk about both. That's what I'm saying. We don't have to choose which one. Both things are true. That was the worst officiated series that I've ever watched.
Wait, which one? Sacramento Kings, Lakers, or UConn?
Kings, Lakers. That Western Conference final, just terrible, right? It literally pissed me off that I cannot even get into it anymore. And what was that? Was that 07? What year was that?
No, that was before 07. It was when Shaq. No, we're talking about, I want to say, don't quote me on this. It's like, it was with the year, it was either 01 or 2. It was when the Lakers, they went to the finals. They beat the Kings to get to the finals. So I remember it. I remember Chris Webber. I remember Jason Williams. I remember Mike Pitt. I remember that team. I remember, you know, that was your era, but I was still watching basketball.
It was 02. It was 02. I just Googled it.
All right. Wow.
It was 02. I don't know if I was going to make it 03, but it was 02. So for like 22 years, almost 22 years, I've been busy. Like, that was some terrible ass officiating.
All right. So we'll close with this question, because I'm looking at the clock and you got to go, and I could go another half hour on this topic. So I'm going to have discipline, because I'm going to just not go down the road of NBA, which is a whole other subject. So you said something before we went on the mic that I really want you to elaborate on. You said, in your humble opinion, that the men's game, the men's college game, is at a low, and the women's college game is at a high. And then you gave an explanation for why. And I'd love for you to share that with listeners. Go ahead.
Well, I've been like talking to, basketball dads and granddads at this point, because, you know, my peer group is getting old. And I've been like wondering why, why aren't we like engaged and highly like into it? Like, I remember like the Fab Five, but even before the Fab Five, you remember Larry Johnson and Stacey Augmon, Anderson Hunt, you know, Greg Anthony, that was the other on that five. Yo, UNLV, the reason why the referees didn't get in their match because they was up by 50 by halftime. Like, the coaching there was like one of Nolan Richardson the same way down at Arkansas. Their way of putting the referees to the periphery was to like go in and just like score as many points as they could, like it's out the gate, like to just like put the dagger in from the beginning. Same thing with John Thompson with like Georgetown when, you know, they were in their heyday. They put that like man-to-man press on them and would not let up, because that was a way. And you see how I'm calling out these teams? The excitement, the athleticism, the competitiveness, the personalities, Tark the Shark, you know, Thompson, Coach Thompson, you know what I'm saying? You got Fab Five and black gym shoes, black socks, baggy shorts, all from Detroit. Not all of them, but most of them.
Juwan Howard, the south side of Chicago. Go ahead.
I was about to correct myself because I ain't going to get beat up when I go home. You know, but you get Juwan from, but you get like heavy Detroit, you get south side of Chicago, and then I think Ray and Jimmy are from Texas.
Yes.
So you see how I'm recalling all this stuff?
Yeah, very good. I'm impressed.
I'm recalling it because of the level of competitiveness and the personal like attachment you form with these teams over time. I could talk about Duke in detail, but not in happy. And exactly, but I can still talk about, like, I ain't like Bobby Hurley, but damn, has there ever been, like, he is a cold point guard. Christian Laettner, Grant Hill.
Overrated.
George played for North Carolina. But anyway, you get my point. You had like all of this concentrated like competitiveness. I don't know if we are getting that same, like, they knew if they didn't win that they weren't playing anymore. Like, I gotta win to keep going. What I'm hearing from basketball dads and basketball granddads, some coaches, some not coaches, is that they think that like the AAU circuit, or just like the club sports circuit, not to pick on AAU, but the club sports circuit offers our young people so many opportunities to play that like not one competitive thing focuses their attention. So it's not like they're putting everything on the court, you know, once a week, because they're in the gym Friday, Saturday, and Sunday playing three games each day. So it's kind of like, if I lose, I play again in 45 minutes. Yeah. So what's the big deal? And you can't front on that being the truth. Like, both things are true. And so how do you, in those circumstances, create a competitiveness that every single time you get on the court, you're playing for the W, right? You playing for the dub. And so here's the other thing. I think Don Staley is dealing with that. You heard them talk about like Cardoso and what's the guard's name? Who Caitlin Clark waved off last year. What's her name? Yeah. And she stuck her like Gary Payton. Stuck her like Gary Payton. Yeah. Again, another story, another reference to it. Like, dude, we were missing. So here's your story. Caitlin Clark waves her off. She thinks about quitting. And then she works hard. She comes back. She locks her down. She ain't waving me off no more. And we win. But we don't even hear that story. It's like, yo, it was just so much to tell. And all sports media, I think at the corporate level, wanted to do is figure out how to make someone Larry Bird and how to make someone Magic Johnson when that ain't the story in 2024.
Yeah. Well, by the way, so I will say this. It worked from a PR standpoint. The ratings were sky high. I saw people watching women's basketball.
Let me tell you why you can't say it worked. Because you didn't do the other thing to see the other thing. So the only way we know that that worked is if we have simultaneous hypotheses being tested in the same way. Mm. Right? So I don't know if that worked. I know that's what they did.
In other words, it may have worked if they'd done it the other way, the way you
right? Who knows? Right. I know people, I know that what worked is that you reinforce the anti-blackness. I know that you put women in a position to define them without their consent. Yeah. I know that. I know that we missed out on seeing Dawn Staley in the same way we could see Coach K. Did Dawn Staley get Coach K treatment?
Don't get me. Okay, we're running out of time. Do not. You see, you've twice now gone toward Duke. That's another half hour for me.
But the bias for Duke and Coach K. Defeated season with a whole group of new starters. Yo, male, female, professional, collegiate, unheard of.
And listen, Coach. By the way, you see Dawn and Coach K with their commercial together. They have a commercial together.
Well, nobody gets it.
I'm going to test your theory out with all my basketball junkie friends, many of whom are coaches or ex-coaches. And I think you're onto something there about AAU, sir. In general, and we're talking about men's basketball now, it's just in general, the concept that you're getting at, which is we've lost the sense of, like when you're in a gym and it's you pick five team and the winner holds the court. And if you lose, you don't get the court, and that's it. You're going to sit for a long time. And so you play hard. We've lost that. That's what you're really saying. We've lost that.
And you know why it works for girls or for women, pardon me? It's because when I was growing up, go to that same playground or go to that same open gym, and you call next and watch them not hear you. Watch them, like, bully their way on the court like they didn't see you. I remember the first time it happened. I got up the nerve to hit next. Typically, I go with my like cousins, and so they would put me on the team because I'm with my cousins, right? Yeah. Or we would go with our friends who are boys who knew because we would play, you know, in the alley or in the backyard, you know, stuff like that. So they knew, so they would come on, you play. But try going without like the support and protection of a boy and call next and you don't get it. That's why you got more competitiveness in the female game because you fighting everything.
Yeah. And I feel if it keeps getting better and better and better, it'll approach the men's game and then it'll have some of the same problems as the men's game. But we're away from that.
Generations for that.
Yes. We're a ways from that. We're absolute ways from that, and I'm with you. I never really went for AAU basketball at all. Now I'm really sounding old, but I just never went for it. And I love listening to guys like Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. They're roughly your generation.
Now you're gonna make me change my mind about you.
Oh, no. Do you ever listen to their show?
Paul Pierce wilds out, O-U-T, and has some very antiquated, like, perspectives about women.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. I'm just talking about when they talk about basketball, when they do their podcast together, the point I was going to make was they sound old. And there comes a time in a person's mind where they sound old and your mind changes. And so you talk about the way things were, whether they were like that or not. People, what KG and Paul Pierce, I'll say mostly Kevin Garnett, are saying about basketball today and today's player, people were saying about them. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, it's just a state of mind. You reach a state of mind and you start talking a certain, you talk about laziness. It's like, and but to me, it's like a your inability to express the bias that you have. So when you're Kevin Garnett and you're 40 something years old and you're talking about today's game and now what, how it used to be, and not realizing that when you broke in, people said that about you. And it's just, it's human beings are, we are who we are. Stacey, we're not without our flaws. Okay.
And thank God that we're not all perfect. And thank God that some of us recognize our imperfections and how that helps us sometimes be better.
Yes. And that's Stacey's way of closing the show by saying, Ben, you're right about that foul. It should have been called. That's her way of saying that. We've run out of time. She can't counter what I just said. So we're just going to have to leave it there.
I don't have to. I've already said you don't make that call. You just don't. It's terrible. You don't make the call. You know, like, I'm not the only one. You saw like social media. You've seen all the college.
Oh, my. I heard the crying from the UConn fans. Boo. Get the rebound. That's what I say to Sue Bird. You know, get the by the way, that's the other thing.
You could say that if it was absent all of the other stuff that happened. Look, real talk, sports media had already created their story, which is why CNN pressed the wrong send button on their photograph of who won and the headline. It was insane. It's just like, they didn't win. And then, so that was one thing. And then the second thing was the camera is literally supposed to be on the people who won for two reasons. They won, and two, let me cry in peace and anonymity. Yeah. After I lose, like, you get to lose and be pissy about it because you put a whole bunch of work in it. So don't put the camera on me and expect me to be magnanimous in my loss. Like, that doesn't happen normally. And so, like, putting the camera all up in Caitlin's face after the game was disrespectful to the victors, and it was disrespectful to the pain any competitor feels when they fall short.
They are almost always shots of the people crying. It was the, victory, the agony of defeat back way. Well, this is before, ask your dad about it. He'll tell you all about it. It's way before your time. Okay. No, I disagree with that point. They always show. The shooter that Michael Jordan drafted, Morrison.
When LSU lost to Iowa, how many shots did you see at Angel Reese and Kim? How many did you see? Go back and watch it. Like, I know you DVR'd it, so go back and watch it.
I don't even know how to do that.
Oh, okay. But, like, I'm sure they'll play it again somewhere. ESPN has it.
How many shots are you still crying, you're saying?
No, but like when the Elite Eight game where Iowa beat LSU, go back to the end of that game and see how many times we looked at Angel Reese after the loss, and then compare it to the final game and see how many times we saw Caitlin.
Okay,
I'm just saying the imbalance. I mean, like, look, you don't get everyone saying the same thing if there's not an imbalance. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. So let me just say this. Caitlin Clark's probably going to Indiana.
If you are a capitalist and you understand race in this country, that's exactly where she should go.
Wait, so who do you root for? Indiana or Chicago?
Hey, I'm North Central. South Bend is closer to Chicago than it is Indianapolis.
So you're a Sky fan. So you want Caitlin Clark on the Sky.
I wanted Skylar Diggins on the Sky. That's who I wanted to Sky to pick up. And where is she, in Seattle?
Yes.
I wanted Diggins in Chicago. But I'm going to tell you something. I've gone to the Sky and sat on the floor, and I'm going to the Bulls and sat on the floor. The sky? Boy, you talking about, like, no, but I'm serious. I think it's something about the number of games that the guys in the NBA play. I do, because, like, your body is only going to give you so much. You're not a robot or a machine, and they do have to take care of themselves. I ain't fronting on that, right? So there is something into the number of games that they play. And that's on top of all of the games that they play when they were on the club sports circuit.
Yeah, no, too many games, too many back-to-backs. No, no question. They got to end that. But that's capitalism. They're squeezing as much money. Everybody's squeezing the money out. The players are taking the money, too.
Well, they should. They doing all the work.
I'm just saying it's everybody's squeezing as much as they can out of it. In fact, Larry Joe Bird said, 20, 30 years ago, they should cut the number of games. He said this when he was playing. They should cut it to 72.
You see it now and how much smarter the guys have gotten. Like, you ain't going to kill me on this court. You see Shaq's feet. You see how, like, they walk. Big, tall, old men, and how they walk. They look terrible.
And we really do have to close, but I'll just say this. Derrick Rose said this after he had his knee injury. Back in 2012, he says, I don't know if you remember this. He said, I want to be able to play basketball or walk with my son, my kid. He had a son at the time. Now he's a daughter too. Okay. And people in Chicago got on him. What's that?
He has two sons and a daughter.
Yes. But at the time, he just had a son. Anyway, the point is, I respect him when he said that. He got a lot of heat from a lot of people. Who knows how legit it is, because it's social media and it's social media.
It looks like we lost Ben, but he'll be back tomorrow. Don't forget, you can catch previous Ben Jarofsky shows, Benny J bonus interviews, read columns from the man himself, read columns from other great reader writers, find out the best in Chicago, and so much more, all at chicagoreader.com. You can follow Ben on Instagram if you like, at Benny J Show. And don't forget to tell your friends, like, subscribe, and follow the Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.